The Money Show.
Investment School.
Investment School on this Tuesday evening. It's a relatively new feature. We invite you to ask your questions, anything you want to know about investing, and we will find the right experts to give you perspectives that you need to make the process more comfortable, more seamless. But tonight it's the issue around why so many people find it so hard to put money away for the long term, and particularly when it comes to doing things like buying shares, get incredibly scared about the idea of investing in stock markets. And, you know, the volatility of stock markets, it's very public, it's very clear. A lot of people prefer investing in things like property because they feel like they can understand, but they don't really understand the costs associated with it. And one day they wake up and they just realize the property's gone nowhere. They've spent an absolute fortune on maintenance, and it's just, you know, it gets very, very complicated. So let's get the views this evening of John Manyike. John is the head of financial education at Old Mutual. Tonight, the psychological barriers to saving and investing. And we all know that we should, John. We all know that we should. And we do sort of, but we don't really engage because, you know, it's higher grade stuff and it's a bit intimidating and it's a little bit scary. Why are we so frightened?
I think, hi Bruce, there's quite a number of reasons why we have these psychological barriers to saving. And I must say, it's even difficult to say where do you actually even start. But I want to start with a very basic or common one. I've looked at a lot of literature. I mean, for quite a number of years, I've been, you know, looking for research on financial education, savings behavior. And what is quite common there is that, you know, lack of financial knowledge is actually one of the leading reasons why people don't see, because you don't know what you don't know. And another thing that also follows that is the, you know, sometimes we underestimate how a low self-esteem can actually impact people's ability to save. There are people who are just scared to even, you know, show the payslip to a financial advisor, you know, or to actually show the dirty linen, to say, actually, I'm in a mess, or I don't earn enough, or I don't know. And that's a big barrier for a lot of people, you know, just being scared to say, I actually don't know, can you help me? And there's nothing wrong with not knowing. You know, you can't know, you can't be a jack of all trade. I mean, there are things you know, there are things that you wouldn't know. So, and it's very prudent to actually speak to an accredited financial advisor. And that's why they're there, you know, they're there to help us to understand this world of investments.
I wonder, you know, why we feel, sorry, I wonder why we feel, John, differently about going to a financial advisor versus going to a doctor. When we go to a doctor, we don't tell them, you know what I've got? I've got this condition. We say, you know, I'm not feeling very well. I've got a sore throat, I've got a runny nose. I don't think it's COVID. I haven't had any contact, but you know, could you check me out? And the doctor then goes and does it. And isn't financial advice kind of the same thing? I don't know how much I've got. I don't know how much I need. I don't really know what's going on. Please, can you check me out? It's not that dissimilar, is it?
Well, I think even there are some similarities. I mean, there are people even going to the doctor when they think that I have to, especially it's some examples I've been sensitive to even make reference to, you know. So, but it's pretty much similar, I must say, you know. So, but one just doesn't understand, why can't we just say, I don't know, I need help, can you help me, you know, so that you can actually get the help that you need from financial advice. But of course, I think we also need to acknowledge, Bruce, that people do find the financial services industry or the banking sector quite complex. There are sections in our economy that would feel that they have some discomfort because they feel that world is just so complicated. But there's also an element of perhaps distrust to some extent, you know, either of because of rumors of people that have lost money, but also perceptions of, you know, some of these charges, whether they are fair or justified, and a whole host of things. I mean, you know, a human being is quite an interesting being because of there's some things that just don't make sense, you know, but we're scared to say, I don't know, I need help.
Yeah. I mean, this discomfort with financial institutions, this lack of trust. And there are so many good reasons why there's a huge trust deficit. We grow up in households where our parents were screwed over by insurance companies in the past. We hear stories, horror stories of investments gone wrong. We don't hear nearly enough stories of investments gone right. So often investing is sold on a negative rather than an empowering positive. And I don't know if that's not the real issue here.
Yeah, no, indeed. I mean, like they say, insurance is a grudge purchase, you know. So, I mean, even a life cover being a precautionary savings, you know, people just generally are skeptical. And I think it's important that, and I must say, you know, one must acknowledge the extent to which the regulator has really made strides to make sure that the consumer is protected with, you know, all the different regulations, you know, to ensure that the customer is treated fairly, you know. But I think even that, it's still not enough to get people to have confidence in the financial system. And again, it makes sense why, you know, your informal saving continues to grow, even amongst your affluent customers. You know, people still would actually have a formal savings instrument, and they would also have a stock file on the side, you know, and that tells you that people still believe that this is the space I'm more comfortable, you know, I know where my money is, and if I need my money today, I know where to start, you know, and there's certainly a lot of work that I think the industry still needs to do to make sure that the credibility of the industry is restored.
So it's not a problem with saving, really, because, I mean, I think South Africans have got a strong culture of savings. People understand that you have to put money away for a rainy day. And the stokvel market in South Africa is a primary example of people being willing to put money away for a rainy day, a funeral, a holiday, whatever, December groceries, or whatever it might be. So there is a culture of saving in South Africa. We talk about South Africans that lack a culture of saving. We don't put enough money away. We don't save, we don't save, we don't save. And that ultimately becomes fact. When, in fact, it's just informal savings. They're not savings that have gone into the formal financial system and they've not been captured by a CISA or others. There are quite substantial savings, I would argue, in South Africa.
Yeah, I think we need to make a distinction between savings and investment. You know, so I usually you know, shake my head when I hear people say no, but we don't have a culture of saving. Actually, we do. You know, why do we have so many billions? I mean, at one stage, I think it was estimated there's about 40 billion flowing in the informal sector. But the issue is that, you know, even those savings are mainly for short term. That's why you have your grocery stockpiles and you have, you know, all sorts of stockpiles that would do different things. There's a rotational stockpile, but they're all aimed at, you know, short term goals and so on. But when it comes to investing for the long term, this is where we have a problem, I think, as a country, that we don't have the patience to actually put money aside for the long term. I mean, there are very few people actually do that, unless it's a forced way of putting money aside through a retirement, you know, benefits that are provided by employers. So, but generally, I think that's a world that we find very complex, because the minute you start talking stocks, you're talking real estate and all sorts of things. I mean, this is the area where we find things to be very, very complex. You see government introducing tax-free savings. The question is, you know, are we getting enough people actually saving, and do people really appreciate that product? But I think the issue gets to, you know, the understanding. It's all about understanding on the difference between savings and investing and the benefit of actually saving. But I also think that one of the chief reasons there, Bruce, is, you know, it's, for me, saving and investing is an emotive thing. You know, you have to have an emotional attachment to your goals. You need to have purpose. Because if you don't have purpose, people who are saving without a specific goal struggle to sustain their savings over the long term, it's simply because there's nothing that drives them to actually keep doing that. So if you say you're someone from the township and you or from the village somewhere, you know you come from a poor family background, and you want to change the misfortunes of your family, and you wake up one day with a resolve that you want to give your children a solid foundation. You don't want your children to go through what you went through. Those are the kind of thought process I think that we need in order to have a clear goal. And because the insurance industry always talk about lapses. You know, why do we have lapses where policy runs for a couple of years and then from there person can't continue and the policy lapses? It's that is the one thing that I believe is lacking. And I think when you have a very smart advisor who is able to draw the links between the reason why you're saving and the recommendations they're making in terms of the type of instrument, this is the kind of conversation that we need to have. Why do you want to put money away and get to the bottom of it?
But that the first thing is people, you know, are, as you say, apprehensive about approaching the advisor. If you're not prepared to have that conversation, if you're not prepared to get in and have the conversation with the advisor and have the honest conversation with the advisor to say, you know, please help, I'm not feeling financially well, you're never going to get the assistance that you need, are you?
Oh, indeed. I mean, you know, it all starts there. And I, again, it's amazing how people continue to rely on family and friends for financial advice. You know, the last time I checked, the blind cannot lead the blind. But I mean, I'm saying that in a positive way.
No, absolutely. I got a call from somebody this week. I got a call, and he was going to remain nameless because they're quite well known. And they said to me, you know, a couple of years ago, you were talking about these carrot bar things. And then I thought, I mustn't go anywhere near them. And then my friend said, he's putting money into carrot bars and I should put money into carrot bars too. So I did, and I've lost all my money. And I'm very cross with myself, and I shouldn't have done it, but I'd done it. And so, you know, I'm afraid it's very, very common. It's this reliance. It's this reliance on others. It's we trust those... You know, nearest and dearest to us, long before we trust, you know, somebody who has an impressive qualification, because somehow they scared the living daylights out of it. We're talking about this evening why it is that we are so intimidated by this world of investing. I'm going to throw some theories at John Manyike in a bit. He's the head of financial education at Old Mutual.
The Money Show.
Investment School.
I put it to you, John Manyike, at the risk of sounding like a lawyer, I put it to you that the industry, the investment industry, makes it difficult. I don't know if it's malicious, and I don't know if it's deliberate, and I don't know if it's just legacy, but the investment industry does make it difficult simply by the choice of language, the obtuse language often that is associated with so many investments and investment options and investment products. Fair, unfair comment?
No. Well, I suppose if you say the legacy issues, perhaps one would say perhaps to an extent, you know, because the remember, very few people could actually participate in some of these investment schemes. You know, I think owing to perhaps income levels. You know, so there were large sections of our communities that could not participate in that. And I think we keep talking about financial inclusion now, although this is now perhaps at the bottom of the pyramid, but the reality is that you have a history where, you know, people have what I call an asset deficit, you know, so we still need to accumulate assets, you know, because I think the issue of wealth, I mean, only after 1994 that we actually really started seeing people participating actively in the economy. So yeah, I think from that context, yes, I'd say perhaps to some extent.
What about the language that you people, the investment industry uses? So the exclusionary sort of language, the technical language, all of the stuff with which you guys are so completely comfortable, it's like having this conversation to you and you can't understand. You can't relate to the fact that some people find it flippin' scary.
So I think it comes in with the profession itself. And let's take, I like the analogy you used earlier about a doctor. How often do you go to a doctor and the doctor diagnoses you after you explain your symptoms? Some of the terms the doctors use, I mean, are foreign. you know, but they have to try that. The issue, there's nothing wrong with those ways, but what's important is to actually unpack it for the customer to say, this is what it means. You can use the term, but use that as let it be an opportunity for you to actually educate the customer on what you actually mean. So I don't think it's the jargon itself that is a problem, but it's not explaining that would be a challenge. And I think that's the role that financial advisors need to play to make sure that people understand. There are some words that don't exist in vernacular, for example. So even if you try and explain certain things, you're going to get stuck in one way or the other, but you have to try and simplify and make it easy for a person to actually understand. But I think that's the reality of the profession. Whether you're talking to a doctor or even a lawyer for that matter, I mean, there are certain words that are unique to that profession. I always say that what's important is making sure that you're an average person understands.
From the point of view of the investment industry, you should be incentivized to communicate better with people. You should be seeing it as an advantage to be able to communicate simply and clearly. And I think there's been some moves by the investment industry to do this, but we still fall into our old habits very, very quickly and very easily.
Well, let me tell you why I believe that, for me, it's not so much about incentives need to be made available. The reality is, as a financial advisor, you understand that if you cannot keep a customer, there's a problem because it also affects your income. So that on its own is motivation enough for any financial advisor to make sure that their customer understands the product that they're selling to them and that the product will do what they say the product will do. So it is in the best interest of any financial advisor and any financial institution to make sure that the customer understands. I cannot imagine any financial advisor deliberately using this big jargon and bombastic words to confuse a customer for the customer not to understand the product and the customer then disinvest. It's not in your best interest.
But also, markets have not been our friends for an awfully long time. If you've been globally diversified, you've had huge exposure to the S&P 500, you're a very happy person. If you have not had that diversification and you have been invested in retirement annuities in South Africa for the last 5 years with the various regulations that go around them, you've made very little in the way of returns. And it's all explained and it's all very clear as to why that's been the case. But again, it then raises the question in lots of people's minds as to, well, markets are scary, they're intimidating, they use a language that I don't understand, and people make less money putting money to stock markets than they do leaving it in the bank. Well, at least until the Reserve Bank governor started cutting interest rates as aggressively as he has. But there is a disincentive there in the disincentive of expectation, I think, in terms of what you can expect to achieve from an investment.
Well, the principle of high risk and high return remains. And I think what's important here is to make sure that a financial advisor profiles the customer to the point where they understand what their appetite for risk is. You know, because I can imagine, you know, trying to advise an elderly person who is either approaching retirement or already on retirement on what to do with the lump sum. So you need to understand what the risk appetite of the customer is, but also, you know, making people understand that, you know, we're part of a global system, you know. So, of course, like they say, if with the U.S. sneezes, the whole world catches the cold. But the reality is, regardless what it is, you cannot be timing the market. It's really about taking a long-term view when it comes to investing and understanding that, yes, there will be risk. I mean, but there are other asset classes that financial advisors can provide.
How do we overcome ourselves, John? Give me some guidance. Give me three things I can do to overcome this completely irrational fear of investing for the long term. What can I do?
So one, I think it's really about having to face the realities. I mean, there are people who have what we call optimism bias. You know, you just cannot imagine any negative thing happening to you. So for that reason, you're less interested in in saving for the future because you think, I don't need it. You know, I don't need that saving. So I think we really need to take a long-term view when it comes to saving and investing, and really sticking the course. I think the problem with instant gratification is that yes, you will be entertained with spending money now, but the reality is that when you retire, for example, and the replacement value in terms of your disposable income, or rather your annuity when you retire, if you earn say 20%. Of your last paycheck, then you've got a problem, you know. And I think we just cannot imagine that reality, you know. To say if you actually don't ensure, if you don't ensure that you maintain the same standard of living, you know, post retirement, then you've got a challenge. I mean, I met one lady going to one interview in one of the media platform channels. And it was a 6 o'clock interview, and I had to be there at 5:30 in the morning. And she was, she said she was 67 years old, and she was doing the makeup, and she had to be there at 3:30. She had to wake up at 3:30 to be there at 4:30. And I asked her why. She said, "Look, I unfortunately didn't have pension, so, and if I don't work, then it means I won't survive, and this is why I'm still working at the age of 67. I think we're going to have a lot of people in South Africa, unless we change our attitude. We're going to have a lot of people who are sitting with that challenge, who have to retire from retirement because they have to survive. I think we just have to see those realities now already for us to start making plans today.
In a world where there just aren't enough jobs to go around either. So, I mean, you know, the ability to retire from retirement in the future is going to become that much harder because there's that much more competition for all kinds of jobs. And, yeah, it's a bleak future for lots and lots of people. Thank you so much for your participation this evening. John Manyike, the head of financial education at Old Mutual. Why you're scared of putting money away for the long term.